Good afternoon, you're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. As the Asian Football Confederation's General Secretary from 1978 to 2007, Dato' Peter Velapen is no stranger to fans of football in Malaysia. He's in the studio now to give me his take on the FIFA crisis and also on the issue of football development in our country. So the media calls it a crisis. What are your thoughts on what FIFA is going through?
Well, it is truly a tragedy. It is, as you know, the governing body of world football. And it has now existed since 1904. And we had really very good presidents and general secretaries. And it really grew into a dynamic body with a lot of funds to be spent on football. Unfortunately, in the last 8 years, the bidding for the World Cup became a very prestigious exercise. And all countries wanted to be selected, and they were the ones who started offering, you know, bribes and favors and so on. I'm like on the sideline watching what's going on and trying to whisper to the general secretary, Sepp Blatter. He's a good friend of mine, but unfortunately in his desire to be popular and to remain permanent on the job, he just let things happen behind his back until such time, you know, the whistleblowers then called off, you know, the problems just 3 days before the Congress in Zurich.
What do you think was behind that desire to stay permanently in the position? I mean, he is a very long-standing, he's been a very long-standing president of FIFA. So what was behind that decision to try and continue?
Indeed. I first met him in the Munich Olympic Games in 1972. He was the representative of Longines. And then again at the World Cup in Germany, we met, he was again Longines. When Dr. Havelange became the president, he then invited him to be the technical director of FIFA at that time, which was 1975. And since then, you know, he has been in FIFA as a general secretary and president. And it is his obsession that, you know, he wants to carry on, although he promised at the last Congress that he would not seek re-election. But he unfortunately didn't respect his promise, and people were very upset with that. But he got his 4-year term again, and then he realized that the entire football family was not with him. There were 73 members who didn't support him. So he thought it over for a couple of days and felt the time has come to go. So 2 days later, he called a press conference. I was in Zurich at that time, and then announced that he would not continue, and he would hand over the presidency at the next extraordinary general meeting.
In your experience working in meetings at Blatter, what is he like in person?
I have to tell you that he is a very intelligent guy, and his entire life, at the expense of three failed marriages, he's devoted to football. He normally goes to office about 7 in the morning, and unless there is some function in the evening, he stays there until 9 o'clock. And this is 7 days a week. And he dedicated himself to the development of football, to the development of FIFA as a dynamic organization. But in the process, he lost sight of what his members of the executive committee were doing. You know. And most of them are really corrupt members.
Back in March, you said in an interview that Sepp Blatter should get a chance to redeem FIFA and himself. Do you still stand by that statement now?
No, actually, we normally correspond, and I've advised him that he should go. Whatever dreams he had, it's all finished now, because the image has been tarnished, FIFA and himself. So he should not waste any more time. He should just hand over to the next president and just go in retirement. Yeah.
The corruption of FIFA is something that I think most people sort of have a general idea about, even if you're not, even if you don't have specialist knowledge about football, or even if you don't have very in-depth knowledge about FIFA. It's something that I think people suspect or people hear about. Why do you think it was allowed to continue for so many years when so many people had a rough inkling that it was happening?
Well, you know, as I said, the World Cup hosts who are bidding are the biggest culprits, followed by these broadcasters, sponsors. All are willing to pay something in order to get the favor. And then some guys, especially in North America, South America, and Africa, saw this as a weakness and then capitalized on that. And this went on unchecked. You know, that was the tragedy of the whole episode of bribery and corruption. Yeah.
Do you think that the 2018 and 2022 World Cup venues should be changed?
As you know, the procedure, the voting, were totally not in line with FIFA procedures. And there have been so many cases of bribery and corruption. And these are all now documented. And the Swiss authorities are investigating this. And as I said, we need to keep the world's most beautiful game clean and beautiful. And if corruption comes in, as you know, it's already among players, clubs, associations, confederations, then it will completely destroy FIFA. It's almost on the verge of destruction. And therefore, if the Swiss authorities can prove that there were exchange of expensive gifts, money, laundering, and things like that, then they should go.
Were the corrupt practices something that you were aware of, you know, while you were having practices with FIFA?
In the last 8 years, yes, I have been. And I keep warning Blatter. He said, yes, I know, but don't worry. But unfortunately, you know, the right things were not done.
If the Qatar World Cup goes ahead, how are players going to cope with the weather? Because that's one of the main challenges that people talk about, as far as the game goes anyway.
You see, the medical committee went there and said, this is not the place for the World Cup in summer. The inspection committee went there and said, too small a country for 12 stadiums. And then they said, don't worry, we will air condition the stadiums and things like that. Then 3/4 of the population are not there in summer. They because of the heat, they all disappear to other countries. And then Mr. Blatter and the former Emir of Qatar are very good friends. The Emir has done a lot of favor for Blatter when he was challenging Havelange and Johansson for the presidency. So I think Blatter wants to return this favor and, you know, promise the Emir he would do everything possible. So on a visit to Qatar last beginning of this year, he even proposed that the World Cup should be held in November, December, and it should finish before Christmas. So that is the current situation. Yeah.
Looking at what's happened with FIFA then, of course, you know, it really exploded when the Americans proceeded with prosecution, with the arrests, with the news conferences. Did the Americans overreach in trying to prosecute FIFA, in your opinion?
No. It was the right thing at the right time. As you know, USA was also bidding a country for the World Cup. And they were very insulted, you know, that they had only one vote, their own vote. And then they knew what was going on. Then they reported this to the FBI. And then FBI said, okay, this is global corruption. And then together with the Swiss authorities, they launched this. I think they done the right thing. And I'm very happy with this situation. Yeah.
I'm speaking today with Datuk Peter Velapin, former Secretary General of the Asian Football Confederation. We're discussing the FIFA crisis. Up next, we get Datuk Peter's opinion on how FIFA can move forward, as well as his views on football development in our country. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Datuk Peter Velapin, former Secretary General of the Asian Football Confederation. We're discussing the FIFA crisis as well as football development in our own country. With all the things that we've talked about, you know, with FIFA being, sort of very entrenched in that culture of corruption and with this very public crisis, how should FIFA move forward and regain public confidence?
Well, the first thing is the change of president. I'm glad Blatter has accepted that. And the challenge is to find the right one. The second thing is the current members of the FIFA Executive Committee must all resign. And they must go back to their own confederations for new elections. So the new president will have a committee newly elected. And they should all be subjected to all kinds of checks on their finances and integrity and honesty and so on. And then they should strictly come up with some rules for the World Cup bidders where there should be absolutely no favors, no corruption whatsoever. And then from there, they should then try to clean up all the confederations, national associations, clubs, players, because it's right across the board. So this is the first step.
In your dealings with FIFA, what was the most frustrated that you ever got?
Well, you know, I've been with FIFA for over 40 years, doing all the donkey's job. I was, as you know, director of the World Cups and director of the development programs and so on. Actually, I thoroughly enjoyed the job. But the frustration is like this. When you hear that people are doing a favor to FIFA by accepting, you know, bribes and favors, then this is something I never accepted in my life. And of course, there was also some political problems between countries. So this is something that we say, listen, if you are coming to play football, leave your religion, leave your politics, everything behind, and just play football. But fortunately, that area eventually solved itself. As a football, as you know, is a tremendous unifier, and I've in practice brought North Korea, South Korea together, Iraq and Kuwait together after the invasion, Iran and Iraq, Yemen, Saudi Arabia. It shows the power of football.
You were also Assistant Secretary of the Football Association of Malaysia from 1963 to 1980. Let's look a little bit more local now. How would you characterize what has happened to Malaysian football since?
The 60s and 70s were the golden years of Malaysian football. As you know, we qualified for the 1972 Olympics by beating Korea in Korea. And then we also qualified for the 1980 Moscow Olympics by beating Japan. And unfortunately, we boycotted that. And if you look at the players, it was truly one Malaysia. You know, you had about five Malay players, eight Chinese players, six Indian players. That's it. But today I can sit and cry of what's happened 40 years later. Why are we in this situation? And I always said that when you want to build a house, where would you start? You would start with the foundation. And these are the schools. Unfortunately, sports in schools, in particular football, are not really as good as what it used to be. Most of the teachers are lady teachers and they don't want to go out on the field. And then the second thing is the clubs are the backbone of football, and these are the pillars of the house, and we don't have good clubs now. Clubs are very amateurishly managed. They are not really good coaches, managers. And then the third thing is the roof, which is the national team. If we secure the foundation and the good clubs, we don't have to worry about the national team because the players are made in these areas. But we are now building the house from the roof. And that's why it keeps collapsing all the time.
Because there's no support whatsoever.
No support, yeah.
Top Malaysian football players earn as much as 80,000 ringgit a month. Are they getting rewarded for mediocrity?
During my time, the players all used to stay in the Merdeka Stadium and eat the food that the restaurant guy provided. And each one would get $10 a day pocket money. But they were all employed by like DBKL and PKR and all this. And when they win a championship like the Merdeka tournament, Tunku would host a dinner and give them all a watch each with his head on the dial and tell them, don't sell this until I die. And then Dato' Harun, he used to provide some money for these guys. We're talking about $500 and so on. But today, the players are overpaid for what they deliver. And this is something that is a problem for Malaysian football.
The World Cup is considered, of course, the holy grail, when it comes to this sport. Everybody wants to qualify. The ultimate dream, I think, for everyone is to win. Why can't we qualify for the World Cup? How can we build a house that's strong enough that will get us there and maybe, at least get us into the first round?
Well, we have been to the Olympics, and therefore we should have constructed the bridge from there on to the World Cup. Today, the World Cup has gone about 200% better than what it used to be. And whereas our team has gone 200% backward. Lin, 40% of the population don't play football. The Chinese don't play football because they all go for individual games. Indians just don't get a chance to play football. So only 60% are playing, and that is not good, So this is another big problem for the Malaysian team. And then our coaches are not professionally trained, and so is the management. So until we need about 5 years to completely restructure football and start building it from the foundation, go back to the schools, go back to the academies, strengthen the youth teams, strengthen the club teams, and then automatically you'll have all the top players.
Looking at your personal life, you were born on October 1st, 1935 at a rubber plantation in Sillia, Negeri Sembilan. What was your childhood like? Were you always interested in football? Was it something that you thought you were going to get involved in?
I published a book, Beyond Dreams, and I can tell you, it was a childhood of innocence. You get up in the morning, have your breakfast, and then mother will take me to the altar to pray. And then we walk about 3 kilometers to the Tamil school at that time. And the first thing is gardening for 30 minutes. And then Tamil education. So this went on for about 7 years until the Japanese came. And then Japanese occupation, we were forced to learn Japanese for 3 years. And so it was, and then nothing else to do. So there was a field in the estate. So we all meet there at 4 o'clock. And then until 7 o'clock, either running or football or catching, all these kind of physical activities. So they were very healthy activities and without any attraction that we face today with children.
Were you motivated in school? Were you a good student?
I don't know whether I was a good student, but I was physically very active, doing all kinds of physical activities. And of course, Tamil education was different at that time. So there was no problem learning, reading the text and so on.
After secondary school, you were selected to attend the Malayan Teachers College in England from 1955 to 1957. Did you always plan to be a teacher?
Yeah, very much so. No, I just wanted to get a job so that I could bring my mother and grandmother out of the estates. This is something that I really wanted to do. But the headmaster told me, no, you have to go to the university. Then I said, it's 5 years, and then I don't have the money. But wait, then suddenly this opportunity came, the teacher training college in Brunswick, England, and I was selected. So we spent 2.5 years there. Then when I came back, then I got a job in the same school where I was studying. then this gave me an opportunity to bring my mother, grandmother out of the estates.
From all that, how did you get involved in football administration, from teaching to football?
The secretary of the Negeri Sembilan Football Association was one Dato Kok Kin King. His daughter and I were in the same class, and I used to spend some evening in their house doing homework and studying and so on. And then at that time, Tunku Abdul Rahman was the president of Malaysian football, and he asked Aking to move to Kuala Lumpur to become the secretary of the Malayan Football Association. Then after I came back from Brinsford, I was then transferred from Seremban to Kuala Lumpur Teachers Training College. So I went to pay respect to him, and he said, "Ah, good, now you'll be my assistant secretary." So that was the beginning of my life.
You grew AFC from its initial 12 members to 46 members during your 30-year tenure at the job. Why is it a challenge to get countries to be part of the AFC?
The AFC represents Asia. And as you know, we have 47 countries. And we felt that any country that plays football should become a member of the big family. So I took it on myself to visit these countries, convince them. And then eventually the last one was Australia about 4 years ago. So that is now the truly Asian football family.
And why did it take convincing? You know, did a lot of people have reservations, or did they have concerns? What were some of those reservations?
Well, they don't know what is in store for them. You know, what are the obligations? If you are a member, you have to participate in one youth competition, one women's competition, one club competition, national competition, and some of them didn't have the resources, or neither did they have the team. But over the years, we built it up. And then AFC also grew in terms of finance, with sponsors and so on. So we were able to help them with money as well.
What do you remember most from your role as coordination director of the FIFA World Cup in Japan and South Korea?
Well, as you know, the World Cup is organized in one country. And on a visit to Japan with Dr. Havelange, he asked me in the plane which country in Asia can host the World Cup. So I said it's Japan, because they have the J-League, the professional league. It is the most organized country in the world. And at the dinner that night in Tokyo, he told them to apply, which they did the following week. 1 month later, I had a call from one Dr. Chang Mong-jun from Korea. He is connected with the Hyundai family. And he said, "I am the president of Korean football, and we want to apply for the World Cup." I said, "You can, but unfortunately, it's a bit late." He said, "Why do you say it's late?" "Because Japan is very keen to organize it." Then FIFA received this letter from Korea. And then Mr. Blatter called me and said, "You go and sort it out, you know." And then also to avoid this bribery corruption, I then proposed to FIFA to co-host it. It has never been done before. And Havelange was not keen. And then, of course, lobbying was fanatical as far as Korea was concerned. But Japan sat back and said, "Okay, Havelange has promised, so we don't have to worry." But eventually, I convinced Havelange the day before the meeting that it is best to co-host it. You know, they were warring countries. We don't want to create another war. And let's try it. So in the meeting, he announced that for the first time, the Japan-Korea will co-host it, and Peter Velappan will be the director.
Why did it take so long for a World Cup to be held in Asia in the first place? I mean, never mind the co-hosting, which itself sounds complicated, but why so long before our continent got its due?
Well, as you know, the World Cup, it used to be 16 teams, 24 teams, 36 teams now. It's a huge event requiring a lot of stadiums, good facilities, infrastructures, hotels and all, which many countries didn't have. Then your own team has to be good. So unless you have all this, and you must have a culture of football, a history of football. And if you don't have that, then I'm afraid it's not easy to do it.
Looking back now on your path to the top of FIFA, what gave you the drive to succeed?
Well, you know, I was in a new area in football, in Asia and FIFA. It was a tremendous opportunity. And I said, this is a field that has not been trodden before, and therefore is a challenge for me. And I had that spirit in me and the love for the game. And I met some wonderful people. One is Tunku Abdul Rahman, followed by Tun Razak, followed by Tan Sri Hamzah, and then Sultan Apahang. All these were lovely people, and so were the FIFA presidents. And very, very good friends who constantly encourage me to go and fulfill the goals you have for Asia and FIFA.
Finally, are you optimistic about the future of football in our country?
At this moment, no. But if they will make some drastic changes, we have the talents, we have the facilities, we have everything, including a football-loving population. There's no reason to succeed. In fact, we are a gold mine in Asia for football. But you have to do the right thing to reach the gold.
Dato' Peter Velapin's memoirs, Beyond Dreams, was released last year and copies are available in bookstores. Thank you very much for your time. I've been speaking with Dato' Peter Velapin, former Secretary General of the Asian Football Confederation. We've been discussing the FIFA crisis and football development in our country here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.